Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Six categories of healthcare workers and at-risk communities qualify for the coronavirus vaccine in Massachusetts in phase one, and that phase starts this month. Governor Charlie Baker outlined the state's vaccine distribution plan at a press conference today and projects that the vaccine would be available to the general public as early as April. Here he is this afternoon.
The availability of a COVID-19 vaccine obviously provides much needed hope and relief for many. In some ways, it does represent the so-called light at the end of the tunnel.
So let's dig further into the what and the why of this distribution plan now with Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center and a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine, and Dr. Christopher Gill, an infectious disease clinician and researcher who focuses on vaccines and the epidemiology of respiratory diseases. He's also an associate professor at the BU School of Public Health. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much.
So, Dr. Boucher, was this the set of rollout priorities that you expected?
You know, Tiziana, it really is what we expected based on the advice from the CDC's advisory committee last week, very much in line with focusing on frontline health workers and then getting to patients most at risk.
And Dr. Gill, same for you, or were there any surprises or variances from what you thought you'd see?
No, not at all. This is what I was expecting to see also.
And let me ask the two of you about that, because we have seen at times during this pandemic better alignment with sort of federal guidelines, federal government leading first, but then also times when the state was leading first. It does seem with this distribution, however, that states, including Massachusetts, are going to kind of hew closely to what the CDC is saying. Is that accurate?
You know, I think so, based on what we know now, Tiziana. Tomorrow is an important day. The FDA Advisory Committee is being convened to review the data on the Pfizer vaccine, and we'll see perhaps an action from the FDA in the next, 24, 48 hours. The CDC group will meet again to make their final recommendations. So, it's still possible that things change a little bit, but so far it looks like there's good alignment.
Dr. Gill, there were choices that had to be made, especially between, let's say, phase one and phase two. If one can see the chart, there are all of these various vulnerable groups in phase one and phase two, and then phase three has one line that says vaccine available to general public. So obviously the tough choices are in those first two phases. How do we figure out what kind of criteria do healthcare providers and public health professionals use to figure out where that dividing line is?
It's a very complicated question you're asking. and I guess the answer is somewhat subjective, but we're first looking at, the risk of being exposed. And so when we prioritize the frontline workers and the police and the fire department and the people who are, as they're calling it, COVID facing, what we're really saying is that, these are individuals who have been putting themselves at risk for the general benefit of the rest of us, which is really extraordinary if you think about it. And I think there is a definite sense of justice in my mind that we are now prioritizing the sacrifice that they made for us to protect them first in turn. I think this is absolutely morally the right thing to do. And then when we move beyond that, we're looking at different categories in terms of the consequences of exposure as opposed to the probability of exposures. So we're looking at different groups who are, to varying degrees, more or less likely to suffer harm, in terms of very severe disease or possibly death, if they were to be exposed with COVID-19. So that's sort of how we're viewing that. I think the first is sort of a pragmatic and I think morally appropriate way of triaging, and the second is really sort of focusing on who in our society is most likely to be harmed by this terrible disease.
So Dr. Boucher, building on what Dr. Gill just said, I want to dive a little deeply into one particular population. Last week, we had Dr. Paul Bittinger, who's the head of the COVID-19 advisory group, on the air, and he told us that that group had recommended that those in incarceration qualify for phase one. In fact, they did. And you may know that the incarcerated have been particularly vulnerable to the spread of the virus. and that testing and care have arguably come late to our jails and prisons. Was this an important public health move, and does it put this vulnerable population in the right place?
Yeah, well, I think you hit on a very important aspect of this whole sort of process at the state level, and the governor was very clear about this today, that the task force approached this whole process with a lens of equity and justice. And so focusing on people in congregate settings like shelters and correctional facilities is very important for that reason, as well as a public health reason, right? The spread has been really out of control in those settings. So from a public health perspective, it's absolutely indicated. But from an equity and justice perspective, those people have less of a voice. And so just like we're focusing on the environmental services worker and the food service worker in the hospital as healthcare providers, we're focusing on these folks as people at great risk with perhaps not the voice they should have.
So let's talk about the timeline, and I've referred to this simple chart that the governor put out today a couple of times. We will link to this chart on our website, radioboston.org, so that listeners will be able to look at it too. Phase one is December through February, phase two, February through April, phase three, which is general population, April through June. Dr. Gill, that's both encouraging, and I wonder if it's overly optimistic. Can we hit those marks?
To tell the truth, I don't know. Because I don't know exactly how the doses that are going to be manufactured by Pfizer and one assumes Moderna shortly thereafter are going to be distributed across the country, or even whether some of them are going to be used ex-US. So I don't have a sense as to what the numbers of doses that are being allocated on a state-by-state basis will be. And obviously that's very important. And, you know, then the second question is also not just the numbers of doses that can be delivered, but our capacity to absorb them in terms of vaccine distribution and also managing the sort of complicated cold chain that particularly the Pfizer vaccine faces. So I guess I can't give you a good... Yeah, keeping it not just cold, but like super cold. So that is an element to vaccine distribution that we've never really encountered before. So I'm as curious as you are to see how this will play out.
So Dr. Boucher, there's the complications that Dr. Gill was talking about with managing. I think the phrase you used, Dr. Gill, was the cold chain. I'm also mindful that both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines, the first two that we expect to be approved for emergency use, require people to get a shot twice. And that essentially doubles the administration and the compliance for a single person to be vaccinated. Does that put a schedule at risk too? Does that double how hard this is to do?
Well, it certainly adds another layer of complexity, Tiziana. And I think that as our teams are working hard to gear up for this process, you know, we're thinking about things like text reminders and other ways we can remind folks that they need to come back on that day 21 for the Pfizer vaccine or day 28 for the Moderna, assuming they both come to be available. And yeah, that, it is going to add to the work, and we're going to have to learn how to do this efficiently. And I think there's huge commitment to do it. But as Dr. Gill pointed out, this is not something that we have done any time in our recent history.
Dr. Gill, we've talked about the complexities here. Is there any advice that you, who have worked on vaccines in the past, would give to the Commonwealth as it prepares to start distribution?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to understand is that we're approaching the distribution of any new vaccine as sort of a public health strategy rather than in an attempt to sort of deliver a product to individuals. So we have to think about, like, what are we trying to do at a population level? And so that's where these early decisions about who goes first and the high-risk groups and the phase one and phase two and phase three rollout plans become so important. You know, there's been a lot of discussion, for example, about how do we achieve this threshold of herd immunity, which is, you know, estimated to be around 60 or 70% of the population who would need to be immune, not just vaccinated, but immune, to shut down transmission of COVID-19 completely. And so when we think about that, you know, with the relatively small numbers of doses that we're giving now, we're not yet thinking about achieving herd immunity. What we're trying to do is risk mitigation, right? That is to say, we are looking to achieve a a population level benefit in terms of reducing the severe disease and mortality due to COVID-19 by focusing on the individuals for whom those outcomes are most likely, i.e. the elderly and those with high-risk conditions. And so the early impact of this rollout will maybe not be reflected quite so much in a drop in the number of total cases that we're seeing, because transmission may still continue in the general population. But what I hope for and expect to see, actually, is that we'll see a significant drop in mortality.
Dr. Boucher, in our last minute or so, let's talk once more with feeling, as they would say, about safety, especially now that we're seeing in the UK, authorities are now recommending that those with a history of allergic reactions not get the shot. So let's just review. Are we anticipating that it will be safe and safe for the majority of people?
Well, so far, based on what we know, Tiziana, it looks like the vaccine is safe. And it's important to remind everybody that there have been layers of safety in this development process. Data Safety Monitoring Committee reviewed the study. The FDA reviewed the data and analyzed it themselves. Their external advisory committee meeting is meeting tomorrow, and you can watch it on live stream. And then the CDC and their advisory committee are reviewing it. So layers and layers of safety, much more so than we ever see for a drug. Vaccines are, you know, regulated in a much more rigorous fashion. So I think that we can trust the recommendations that come out of that process.